Cooking for Politics podcast is brought to you by Global Pulse Media, which has partnered with Hivecast FM, a firm that assembles a creative and professional team that takes podcasts such as Cooking for Politics to the next level. This team handles all audio and video editing services. So for a nominal fee, you will get a personal account manager that helps take the headache out of editing and just leave podcasters like myself focus on just creating good content for their audiences. So if you're a podcaster listening and need help editing, feel free to reach out to me. I can be reached at cuckooforpolitics@gmail.com. I could not have succeeded without this talented team at Hivecast FM. This is Michael, host of the political podcast, Cuckoo for Politics. I am so passionate about politics, hence the name Cuckoo for Politics, and I hope you are too. Thanks for joining. This is a podcast discussion on political perspectives on various issues that matter with citizens of the world. So I do ask that you grab your favorite libations, whether it be coffee, tea, water, juice, beer, wine, or a spirit or two, and let's get ready for some lively conversation and let's learn something together. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Raw and Uncut. It is a special political series where I, along with political commentator and sidekick, Sam Jean, we have candid discussions on a whole host of political topics. Depending on the intensity of the subject matter, you can occasionally find our conversation to be of serious nature or could be lively, raw and uncut, as in the title, as we sometimes either make fun of a particular topic or just point out the hypocrisy of any given issue, as politics in general can be a mixture of both. In today's episodes, we will discuss why politicians are afraid of truths in education. And because they are afraid, they are making an effort for you to be afraid, especially young people. Joining me in this discussion is no other than my Raw and Uncut brother and political commentator, Sam Jean. In brief, our bios is that we are both majored in history and graduated with a liberal arts degree from Eastern Nazarene College, located in Quincy, Massachusetts. In fact, Sam likes to remind me that he did not just graduate with just a degree, but with distinction, magnum cum laude. Nevertheless, much respect to him. We have kept in touch over the years as we pursued postgraduate degrees. Sam graduated with a Juris Doctorate from Boston University, and I graduated with a master's degree in political science, inducted to the Phi Sigma Alpha, Sam, Honor Society, from St. John's University, located in Queens, New York. Each of us have actively participated in various forms of political activism over the years, while working in our respective professional fields. Moreover, my guest went on to establish his own consulting firm and has appeared in both Canadian and U.S. media outlets discussing both domestic and foreign policies. We are both cuckoo about politics, hence why we get together from time to time to discuss the various political topics of the day. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Cuckoo for Politics, and let's get ready for some lively discussion while learning something together. Welcome back, Sam, as we begin another installment of Season 3 of the Raw and Uncut Dialogues. We often get a lot of feedback on our lively discussions, so let's just jump right in. Now, it seems now that the Republican Party, after years of enacting laws in certain states with the sole intent of restricting a woman's right to choose, and then getting a favorable Supreme Court decision that supported their decade-long fight to get the Roe versus Wade decision overturned, are now bent on focusing their attention on education, especially on how American history is taught and what aspects of America's long story are to be included. My question to you is this: what is your political perspective on the continued efforts made by Republican-led states in their aggressive attacks on education And why do you feel they are afraid for white children knowing the truth of American history? I mean, is that a fair question to begin a conversation?
Oh, Michael, I think that's a fine opener, Michael.
Okay.
And folks, we're going to keep this. We're not going to even edit this out, okay, because it's raw and it's uncut. But to answer your question, Michael, all this is what happens when you promote CRT religiously for 2 or 3 years. When I say you promote CRT, what I mean is you promote this fiction that kids are being taught critical race theory, and then their definition of critical race theory is anything that makes white students uncomfortable about American history. That's considered CRT.
And you know what? Interesting, Sam. The press asked one of the governors, Governor DeSantis of Florida, why is he limiting or enacting the schools, including businesses, to teach Black history or critical race theory? And he actually responded that it not only violates the state's anti-woke law on how race is being taught, but he doesn't see any value in teaching it. He called it historical fictional topics. That's an absurd.
Well, it's particularly absurd because for those who don't know, Ron DeSantis has a degree in history, I believe, from Yale. Or if he doesn't have a degree from history from Yale, he taught high school history when he got out of school. He was a teacher. But those who have followed Ron DeSantis also know that when he was a teacher, he tried to minimize what the Civil War was about, and he tried to minimize the impact of the Civil War. All this is performative politics. There are a group of people who belong to a particular bubble who have been told for the past 5 or 6 years that their history is being erased, right? So if you ask to take down Confederate monuments, that's erasing their history. They're being told that new creative histories are being written. When you and I studied history, and African-American history in particular, back in the late 80s, there were people, not to date us, right? But back in the late 80s, there were people who said that they started to call it revisionist history, right? They started to say, well, this is not actual history because history for these people is what is taught in history books. But there are studies that have been done in particular, and your guests can look it up, that shows you the racism and the denial of African-American contribution to American history in our history books. Our history books, the history books that we grew up with, the history books that were approved by schools and communities and districts, those books were full of misinterpretations. Those films were actually, some of them were full of outright lies, right? And they have been a movement to help to correct that. But that's not what the political forces on the right want. They want any book, for example, a book that talks about how to be less racist. Now, that's not a history book, right? How to be an anti-racist, right? That's not a book that a teacher is sharing with a three-year-old or a five-year-old or a second grade class. But they lump all these things together, and their point is a political point, because they have been told, your students, particularly your white students, have been told that they are colonizers, they've been told that they are oppressors, and that this new kind of history is bad for essentially their self-esteem and the self-esteem of the nation. And so you're not allowed to, for example, in Florida, right? For example, you're not allowed to reference anything that might make one race feel bad about itself. Now, having said that, you can teach slavery though, right? You can teach slavery because you don't care whether Black students feel a certain way about their history as slaves in this country. But you cannot say, for example, that slavery was wrong, that not everybody was for slavery, and that slavery is the shame of this nation. You're not allowed to say that. And the reason you're not allowed to say that is because ostensibly it may make a white kid feel bad about being white. How that tracks, I have no idea. I don't understand. I don't understand why a white kid would think, oh, I'm bad because my ancestors enslaved people. No, a white kid would think, it is bad that my ancestors enslaved people, and I'm glad we don't do that anymore.
Well, I think of two things right now. When you said about teaching Black history, and I was watching news, and they were reporting. Now, get this. And actually, I'm going to ask you this question, and I'll tell you what happened unless you already know. They were teaching Black history in a Florida school at a daycare. And what do you think, as you're a teacher, what would you teach in regards to the students on Black History Month? You're the teacher. You have a lesson plan. What would you teach the kids?
Well, I would tell you what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't paint anyone in blackface.
Exactly. That's where I was exactly going. I could not believe that a Florida school allowed, I think it was a private daycare, or I'm not quite sure, but I knew that the parents were just upset that their child came home with blackface as a way of teaching children this is what Black History Month is about.
I read the particulars of it. I think they had some white kids in blackface. Like,
correct.
The entire thing is incredibly bizarre. But one of the things that I heard Skip Gates, this historian, say years ago, is that countries who sort of confront their history of racism and bigotry do better than countries that do not, right? And so we have this issue in this country that we keep essentially trying to rewrite the past to make it seem like it wasn't what it was, okay? And that's what's going on. That's what's happening with this idea that somehow you have to control history. But it's all political. It's all designed to make people who feel a certain way more comfortable. That's all it's designed to do. It's not designed to actually educate anyone. I think about this. I took, at the time, again, I'm dating myself, but at the time, I took a Black history course in high school. It was called Afro-American History. I took it in high school. This is, again, in the late 80s. Nobody thought it was strange. There were things that I learned in that class that up to my point of being a student in America, I had not learned. There were people that I learned about in that class that up until that point, as a student in America, I had not learned it. And why didn't I learn it? It wasn't because it wasn't true or accurate. It was because books didn't reflect it. Think about this. When we went to college, my American history class gave me a completely different perspective of Custer, right? When you're growing up, right? We used to play this cowboy and Indians, right? And somehow we took, this is how warped it is, right? We were like, yeah, we're on the side of the cowboys, right? And so we would play this game, and they would talk about who the heroes were. Look, these people were massacred by natives. They were scalped, et cetera, et cetera. And Custer is presented as a hero. Now, by the time I got to college, and we were lucky enough to have history teachers who weren't going to just let you believe what you wanted to believe, right? You had to go and learn the truth of it. We learned that Custer was actually not an American hero, that he was a person who broke rules all the time. And he also was a person who treated the natives with a particular kind of cruelty up to that point that had almost been unseen, right? And so there is a reason why natives have a particular view of Custer than white Americans or America has. These are things that ought to be taught. There should be, it shouldn't even be controversial, but it's been turned into a political weapon. And so you have people who are adding things in there that don't belong in there. And all it's going to lead to is, again, people with a particular bent taking over school boards, taking over governorships. And now you have the governor of a state essentially saying, these are the things that are allowed to be taught in this state. Okay? But keep this in mind, Michael, when they are asking other questions, when they are presenting their version of history, it's okay because all they're doing is asking questions. Okay? So they can ask questions about the inferiority of Black and brown people. They can ask those questions. They can ask questions about the mental state of the queer community. They're allowed to ask those questions, even historically. But somehow you aren't allowed to ask questions about how this country came to be the way that it is. If you somehow mention, I had a conversation with someone a few months ago, and his issue was this idea that somehow slavery made America what it was. He was like, hey, slavery didn't invent, you know, the car or the airplane. And he forgets that when you have an economy that is built on people working for free, okay? These are people that you're not paying. Of course that boosts the economy. Of course it leads to certain things because of the fact that you have a labor force that you don't have to compensate at all. You actually don't even have to care about them, okay? Because you can just replace one with another with another. There's a reason why the South could compete with the industrial North in a war. How did the South have all this money? What did that come from? It doesn't matter if there were only 10 slave plantations in all of the South. They generated so much money that it boosted the economy of the South. Now, why can't you say, why can't we have those conversations? Why do we have to pretend now all of a sudden that if you have that conversation, well, some people, you know, they give you these facts. Oh, most of the soldiers who fought, they weren't, you know, they weren't slave owners. But none of that has anything to do with that, right? None of it has anything to do with why was the Civil War fought? Why should we talk about these things? And then we can say, okay, after the Civil War, there was Reconstruction, okay? And after Reconstruction, there was Jim Crow. And up until about 50, 60 years ago, Jim Crow was the law of the land. Why do we have a birthday celebrating Martin Luther King? Why? Is it because America has always been equitable and fair to people of color? Of course not. And there's nothing wrong with pointing that out.
What's interesting is that not only is Governor DeSantis, you have 25 states that are considering this piece of legislation where they are looking to change the curriculum of our schools in public schools and college. And so it kind of, you kind of like, you're wondering. So they're saying these governors.
But Michael, they're the free speech crowd.
That's where I was going with. This is the Republican Party that says, you know, individual freedom. They strive for freedom. You, the people, must decide. Yet by law, they're enacting laws that will dictate what you must learn. Is it, I don't know, are they becoming like North Korea? I mean, I don't, this is what's going on.
It's hilarious because up until, I don't want to blame Trump for this. Okay. This kind of resentment has been building there, but up until, 10 years ago, or let's say 8 years ago, this wasn't even an issue, you know, even this issue about, drag shows, you know, you and I are from New York City. There've been drag shows in New York City since we were kids, right? Like it's not.
And I don't remember my parents taking me to a drag show, but I mean, I don't know why that's an issue now.
But here's the kicker. Nobody made a big deal about it. It wasn't perceived to be this thing that it's perceived to be now. Okay. this idea that if a parent wants to take their kid to a drag show, that's their parents.
That's their business. That's their
parents, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, anybody who's done any kind of theater knows that oftentimes men will dress up like women and women will dress up like men. Like, that's part of it. I mean,
that's Shakespeare.
That's all of theater. But the point is, now something that has just been normal and accepted is now being looked at as something which is a mechanism for the molestation and the hurting of children. Okay? That's the sort of tenor that drives these conversations. And it goes to this whole, you know, what books we're going to ban and all of that, because they're saying that these materials are somehow unsuitable for children. Okay? And children should not know about it because it could be dangerous. It could lead them, quote unquote, down the wrong path. But again, this is the group that says that they believe in free speech. This is the group that says the problem with American colleges is that conservative voices are being stifled. Okay? This is the same group. Yet they want to tell you, this is what your kids can learn. This is what your kids shouldn't learn. And here's the other thing. They're not educators. And if I'm an educator, I'm offended, right? That someone who isn't an educator, someone who is a politician, or people who are groups of politicians who haven't spent a lot of years as teachers and understanding what it takes to be a teacher. And again, I see this as an attack on teachers. You have these people now telling you, this is what you're going to teach kids. But this is the group that believes in free speech.
Yeah, this is, and you know what? If they go after these studies, they're going after African-American history. What will stop them from going after like Hollywood? Now they can't have biopics of historical figures that took place and then basically whitewash that story. I mean, where does it end? Keep continuing going on further and further if we don't say something now?
We have to say something now. People have to say something. But I don't think that a lot of them believe that, because most of all the stuff that Ron DeSantis has tried, when it's gotten to court, courts have thrown it out, right? Courts have said, oh, no, this doesn't work. This is unconstitutional. A lot of it is performative, Michael. It is a nod and a wink to people who feel a certain way and saying, hey, listen, I'm on your side. Look at what I'm fighting for. Okay? They go look for a problem. Okay? Okay? They try to present a solution for a thing that isn't a problem. But for the people who live in that world and believe that's the case, they go, yeah, that person is stopping our kids from being indoctrinated by groomers. Because, and here's the other thing about this free speech crowd, right? They believe in free speech. And when they're giving you their version of their worldview, it's not indoctrination, right? So if I'm talking to if a conservative professor is giving me an interpretation of the Constitution from, quote, an originalist perspective, that person in a conservative mindset isn't trying to indoctrinate me, okay? They're just giving me information. But if a liberal professor gives, quote unquote, a liberal interpretation of the Constitution, then that person is being perceived as indoctrinating me. Okay? And that's the thing about conservatives. When they're talking to you and they're sharing ideas, and when I say conservative, I'm talking about in this limited context of this conversation we're having about schools and what's being taught in schools. Their perception of these things are that if you present anything that has a whiff of liberalism in it, you're indoctrinating someone. Okay? But when they share their political views, it's not indoctrination. So you can never win that fight, right? You can never win that fight because their argument is, oh, listen, the reason we want this book banned is because you're indoctrinating people to believe that this and this is okay. Okay? That's their idea. If a teacher assigns a particular essay, for example, their notion is they're assigning you that essay because they believe that essay is true and they want to indoctrinate you, as opposed to the fact that, I'm assigning this essay because this has an idea that I want the class to explore.
Exactly. That's what story problems in math was all about.
Yeah. But you're not allowed to do that. Also problems that relate to treating others kindly, treating others equally. It's almost like there's just this guilt. Well, we can't have those kinds of math problems. There was a math problem that was taken off of a test simply because it was trying to teach empathy. Okay. And somehow that's a bad thing to teach kids because we don't want to indoctrinate kids to be empathetic.
You know, it's interesting with the things that you talk about, because as you were talking, a couple of points came in my head. You talked about the Reconstruction, you know, the Reconstruction era after the Civil War, and how after that there was Jim Crow. What's left out of Reconstruction is how white plantation owners, the federal government gave them reparations for the loss of revenue that they had. And we never, I don't recall the one that we were supposed to have?
40
acres of mule. I was thinking Spike Lee. Yes, exactly.
So here's the thing. The term 40 acres and a mule wasn't even something that was created in the modern era. Right. It was created during Reconstruction because the radical Republicans, I love when conservatives say this too, you know, they're like, hey, you know, Republicans are the ones who, you know, fought against slavery. Right. But these legit radical Republicans, they believed in this notion of 40 acres and a mule. They believed in this notion that you can't emancipate people and then just they have no place to go. They have no way to make money, because as you know, after slavery, there was another form of slavery, you know, sharecropping, because all of a sudden you're free, but you're still working on the plantation you used to work on. Okay. And on top of that, you're still not getting paid because the landowner is basically saying your rent, I'm going to take it out of what I would have paid you in wages. Right. So when someone like Ta-Nehisi Coates talks about reparation and conservatives treat it like this is some new progressive, crazy idea, it demonstrates their lack of knowledge of actual history. Because think about what that would have done if slaves, former slaves, were given 40 acres and a mule, essentially 40 acres and a plot, a plot of land and a way to work that plot of land. Think about what this country would look like when folks were homesteading. That is to say, they were going to the West and America opened it up. It's like, hey, go West, right? You plant your flag. That's your piece of property. Think if African Americans, people in this country who were former slaves, were slaves at the time, were given that opportunity.
How much you would have created generational wealth beyond.
Exactly. Okay. But if you're left out, think again of the GI Bill. If there were opportunities that African American soldiers got, that white soldiers got. And that is not to say that the opportunities that white soldiers got were bad. That was the government intervening in a way that was helpful, that was good. But imagine if everyone who was a citizen in society had the equal opportunity to participate in those things. Now, I don't see how, if that makes a person feel bad on account of their race, then that person ought to reevaluate why they feel bad. Okay? You should feel bad if you feel bad about it, and I think you should feel bad because a group of citizens were treated inequitably. And there was a society that was founded on that principle, in part, that there's going to be a group of people who we are going to treat differently than another set of people.
What I feel like they're taking away, when you learn about history, you are just not only becoming more self-aware about yourself, your heritage, your country, your society as a whole, but you also have a way of understanding poking fun of it. And what I mean by this is, you remember the movie Black Panther, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and it was a very popular movie. I've seen it several times in the theater as well as when it came on streaming devices. So there was a part, I remember seeing it with another group of friends of mine who are white. And the line that was laughed the most, so there were so many good points, but one that was, is one of the characters was treating when the white character, I forgot his name, but he was a CIA operative, and he woke up after the character revived him and healed him. And then he woke up and startled her. And she responded, "Don't scare me, colonizer." I'm paraphrasing. And that was a line that not only me, the black person laughing, but my white friends are laughing too. Why? Because we understood the history. We know where she was going with this. Neither one of us got offended. Not did we start a fight. No, it was just humor. And that's what's beautiful about understanding and appreciating history.
Well, you know, the thing for me is they don't like those words because it harkens to, and I believe that there are people who, it's not that I believe, strike that. It is clear that there are people who believe that the only way that the world could have moved in the way that it moved is if things happen exactly like they happen. So let me explain what I mean by that, right? They believe that the only way that the West could advance was to be colonizers, okay? And so what they do is they don't see colonization as something that is bad, that is evil, that strips the dignity of peoples who are being colonized. If they do see that, they think, well, that's a necessary evil for the benefits of what colonization brings, right? Okay? And so from there, they don't like that. They don't like the word oppressor, right? Because they feel like, well, the way history moved, if we didn't do these things, the world would not have advanced. Now, me, I disagree. I've studied history. Not everybody thought that enslaving people was great. Not everybody thought that subjugating people were great. Okay, so the world could have moved differently. But to your point, average, everyday people aren't offended by a reference to the histories of white people, particularly as it relates to Africa. And speaking of Africa, one of the first things that my African-American history teacher said was that when you look at a map, maps are skewed. And we all wondered what she meant by that. And she says, when you look at a map, Africa looks the same size as the North America, right? North America looks the same size, right? It looks the same size as Europe, right? It looks the same size as Australia.
I get what you're saying.
But Africa, the African continent is the second largest continent, right? Okay, you could fit China, India, Japan, Mexico, and a couple of European nations into Africa. Right? But there's a reason why it's rendered that way. There's a reason why a lot of people don't know that. Like, they wouldn't know that Africa is the second biggest continent. There would be no reason for them to know it because Africa and the African continent has been portrayed a certain way. And now, having said that, there's African American history, which is its own thing. And there is the history of Africa, which is a completely different thing. And there are so many countries, so many different cultures, so many different people, so many different languages that in and of itself is a whole other area of history that we also should be teaching, okay? Because people all over the world, they know American history, but we don't know that. So when we think of African history, we think of African history in this big one monolithic thing. Meanwhile, the history of Northern Africa is very different than the history of Southern Africa. The history of Western Africa is very different than the history of Eastern Africa, all right? But none of that is taught because Africa is not seen as, unfortunately, as worthy of the kind of attention that other places get.
Which reminds me of that movie, you remember, Hotel Rwanda, when that scene when they're pleading for the world to come rescue it, and that UN general or colonel says, you know, no one cares about Africa.
But it is the place that has been stripped of natural resources, gold, oil, whatever you can find, diamonds. Now, Africa is why we have our cell phones, right? You have a bunch of, unfortunately, you have a bunch of, you know, often in cases, kids who are digging in these mines and doing these kinds of things. Africa as a continent, there's a reason why it was colonized, okay? And people try to often pretend, well, it was colonized because of race and things related to race. Sure, that's part of it, but it was colonized because there was things there that the European powers wanted, okay? It financed lots of things. There are things there that the East India Company wanted. There are things there that the Dutch wanted. There are things there that the French wanted. And that's part of the reason why Africa was colonized, carved up, and for hundreds of years under the dominion of outside powers. But somehow, if you were to mention that in a school, that might be considered inappropriate.
Yeah, you would have been considered woke, and you would have been arrested because you're enlightening students the truth about the resources of Africa. Because, put it this way, no nation, when we talk about the former colonizers, Europe, America, they would not have become who they are today without the rape and stealing of the resources from Africa. And I think, China, it knows this too, as they are building, they're establishing business relationships, political relationships with Africa, because that is the new resources with the semiconductors, the chips, everything that we need, all the raw materials is coming from that beautiful continent. Sam, we could go on and on. So with that, let's take it off to the next subject area. So do you mind coming back as always?
Yeah, I'll come back as always. We were really serious in that last segment. There wasn't much room for giggles.
No, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. You're right. We didn't have much time for giggles, but you know, there's still time. More Roaring and Cut. Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for my closing thoughts after a brief word from one of my sponsors. Before I close, let me first say thank you for listening, especially those listening for the very first time. I so appreciate you. I appreciate all my listeners, and I hope you enjoyed the discussion. If you wish to provide feedback or comment on any of the episodes, you could reach me at cuckoo4politicsfeedback@gmail.com. Follow me on social media on Facebook. I could be found under cuckoo4politics, or on Instagram, cuckoo_4_politics. I ask that you continue to subscribe to this podcast, which can be listened on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever podcast platform you choose to listen to this episode. Once you subscribe, you'll be able to get the latest episodes that drops, as well as some bonus features. You can also listen to my podcast and find past episodes on my very own website, cuckoo4politics.com. Feel free to comment on either of those platforms, as I welcome all feedback. Now for my closing thoughts. So here are the facts. The Manhattan Institute, a conservative think tank, proposed to states to adopt legislation to take steps to ban diversity in schools and in workplaces. In 2021, Idaho passed a law banning the teaching of critical race theory in schools and universities. In 2022, Florida passed the Stop Woke Act, which prohibits the instruction on race relations or diversity in schools and in the workplace. In 2023, Arkansas signs the Learn Act, revamping its educational public school system that raises teachers' salaries, but includes banning any curriculum that would indoctrinate students with ideologies like critical race theory. In all, there are 25-plus states that hope to put such bans in place before the end of their respective legislative sessions. So while that's in the works, these same states and the anti-woke school boards are already taking measures in banning any books that contain a whiff of any of the following subjects: gender identity, sexual orientation, sexual reproduction, and of course, anything on race. Despite the number of those who oppose such draconian measures, like the teachers, like the parents, like the students for that matter, who have taken their concerns to their own elected state representatives are met with resistance, and they're told they can only speak on the procedural matters and not the merit of the bill. Think about it. You, the citizen, would like to make your voice heard about your displeasure of the intent of a proposed bill that will directly impact you and your community. You go to the legislative chamber to speak out against it, but you are told you can only make a comment on the voting procedure, but say absolutely nothing regarding the terms of the bill in a democratic society. Ain't that something? Jim Ross, an Arkansas historian at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, said the changes being made in his state, and I would argue in other states as well, would only serve to resegregate public schools. It should be pointed out most of these measures that are taking effect in states that represent the old Confederacy. Fear of indoctrination is what conservatives argue is their reason for such measures. Yet, the rhetoric they speak of, ironically, is deemed gospel. Moreover, they have yet produced of any sort of evidence, especially by the time of this recording, that children who are taught certain aspects of history or exposed to drag shows, for that matter, either question their sexuality or begin developing low self-esteem as a result of the current academic curriculum. Conservative lawmakers who are engaged in restricting education and pursuing laws to limit drag performances in the name of protecting the children are simply doing this as a distraction. When a party is morally bankrupt and cannot develop a plan in addressing real issues that concerns their constituency, they will refer back to the old political playbook of politics, invoke culture wars. Reading the kinds of literature that are now being banned, and there's too many to name, in general, these classic literary works could only help illuminate the mind and provoke a different sort of cognitive progressive way of thinking. I suspect perhaps this is what conservatives are afraid of, the threat of their intransigent ways of thinking. The act of banning books is what autocrats and fundamentalists do. This is not done in a democratic society, especially where Republicans who espouse individual freedoms. Forward thinking is a threat, not what's in the classic literary works. In my opinion, the use of the CRT or anti-woke terms is spoken by conservatives and their radio and TV personalities are clearly being used as dog whistles, because the use of those words help them elude of using race without overt racial slurs, such as the N-word or any other racial tropes. The use of these terms provide a cover or a shield, if you may, to hide their own prejudices, attitudes towards others. People like that find it easier to hate rather than seek understanding. As America continues to grow, increasingly more diverse, less religious, and becoming more socially conscious of others, the base of the Republican Party, along with their elected leaders, will find it hard to adapt. Hence, the main reason for the take on enacting extreme measures is mainly out of fear and survival. Being afraid of the truth about America's long history will only foster ignorance and eventual pain. I close with this quote from Harlem Renaissance literary laureate James Baldwin. And he says, "People cling to their hate so stubbornly is because they sense once hate is gone, they will be forced to deal with pain." I'll just leave it right there. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in the next episode of Raw and Uncut. as political commentator and brother Sam Jean, we come back and talk about the lies the media tells you. Stay tuned for that episode. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael, host of the political podcast Cuckoo for Politics. Until the next episode, stay blessed.